Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I'm your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the content creator and community manager here at Living Sober. And today I am joined by Alex Fulton. Now, Alex is a creative. She's an interior designer, amazing. She is a cold water swimmer. She is a wife, a mama, and she is sober. Welcome, Alex.
Absolutely. Yes. Hi, Lotta. It's been so long. We've only ever talked on messages and we've never been face to face.
I know. And I'm a big fangirl. I'm wearing this for you.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely.
For people who don't know, Alex is all about colour. It's just the most amazing, amazing, vibrant vision that you have for spaces and life. But anyway, let's talk about the alcohol because.
Yes.
How long have you been sober for now?
It'd be about 10 and a half years now. So it was 27th of June 10 years ago. And I know that because I'm still looking at my little counter app that tells me hours, days, minutes, seconds. And I obviously don't look at that as much as I maybe used to, but it still helps just to, I don't know, you know, when things get a little bit hard or just a reminder, because it's a massive journey to go through being sober, and I've been through everything, highs, lows, everything in between, and it it's something to be celebrated. Like I don't really talk about it on my Instagram, which is obviously design led, but it's still part of me. So I do celebrate, you know, the 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, whatever it is. And I think at the beginning it was like 3 months, you know. But, yeah, it's really important because just as much as I'm creative and do this job, being sober has definitely affected that, and in a good way. And I, yeah, it's just part of me. It's just part of what I do. It's part of my life personally and professionally, and yeah, it's I'm super proud to be sober.
It's so interesting that you just volunteered that it's had an effect on your creativity, because I wanted to ask you about that. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit of the story? What was your drinking like? When did it start? How did it go?
Well, we had I live in Sumner in Christchurch now, and had lived in Sumner in Christchurch, and had children. I've got two daughters, one who's just had her 21st, which we can talk about later. But we had the earthquake here, obviously. Interestingly enough, and side note, during the earthquake, I was bed bound because I had pulled all three of my hamstrings off my pelvis at a wedding, at my cousin-in-law's wedding. So obviously very merry and showing off, which I was prone to do. So I was known as Flexi Lexi doing the splits, but it actually landed me in hospital and a surgery. So during the earthquake, I was actually immobile and had my surgery, and they can't cast it, obviously. So I had to be 7 weeks, no movement.
Oh, my gosh.
So after the earthquake, when that happened, I was obviously on crutches and, you know, it was a nightmare. But we ended up going up to Blenheim, which is where my husband's family's from. And I could, it meant I just could, you know, we could take the girls up there while we sorted the house out. And that was our first little insight into Blenheim. And the girls went to school there while there was no school here, and we actually found a really great little community up there, and eventually decided to move up to Blenheim to be closer to Jeff's family, and the girls loved the school there, so it was very easy transition. But the other thing to note, I guess, I have amazing community here in Sumner, and we all of our girlfriends, most of them had sons, and I obviously have two daughters. And then when I got to Blenheim, a lot of my friends all had daughters. So that what I'm trying to say is that there was a lot of socialising, you know, dropping the kids at school, meeting for lunch at a winery. It was quite a different scene. Yeah. And I was drinking a lot more. Like, if a lot of people say to me, oh, Alex, you know, why have you given up? You're not a, you know, booze hound. I don't know. You know, like they just, they're like, yeah, you know, I was fun drinking and I was, you know, all those sort of things that come hand in hand with social drinking. I wasn't, you know, shifting a bottle of wine in the morning, but what I found was it just ramped up there. You know, wine was currency in Blenheim. I was getting paid in cash, you know, in wine, and it was just, you know, I was designing wineries. Like, it was just everywhere. And
and you were also trying to build up a new community and new connections and probably feeling a little bit like trying to put yourself out there. It takes a lot.
And it was it's a very small community up there. So there's established relationships, and I had some good friends that I'd known prior who lived there, and ones that I'd gone to university with. So it was just very much part of our life. And what happened was it just sort of got more and more and more and more. And I remember even at I had my 40th up there, group 40th, and I remember looking at the wines that were lined up on the, you know, the bar, and they were insane because winemakers bring their best wine. It's not like, you know, you bring your $9 bottle of wine. I just remember thinking, whoa, you know, these are just incredible wines.
Fancy.
Yeah, fancy. And but it just, I did notice, you know, there was something in the back of my head saying to me, oh, and speaking of that, a lot of chatter in the head. You know,
yeah,
a lot of around alcohol. Yeah, like that's the main thing that's disappeared. And I remember saying to my husband when I did stop, I said, oh my God, the chatter around alcohol is gone. And he was like, what do you mean? What chatter? You know, like he's a social drinker and a binger. He wouldn't drink during the week, I would. You know, I did the old, oh, that's a bottle gone, you know. At night, I had, just as a aside, but I had, you know, struggled with depression and anxiety quite a lot, and I know that alcohol did no favours to that. It was a great way to suppress it, to push it down at night when it would all come bubbling up. A few drinks would definitely, or a few drinks, maybe a bottle of wine would suppress that, and then sure enough it came back tenfold the next day, depending on how much I drank or how tired I was or how busy I was with work. So I know I was getting to a point, and then I guess the breaking point, or the, you know, the sort of pinnacle of drinking was we had a Super Sunday, like a, you know, all the families got together at a pub, which was walking distance to our house. We had a big day. The kids were running around. You know, it was that kind of mad frenzy, you know, on a Sunday, and exciting. And I remember, like, I was pretty pissed, but I could handle it, you know. And this is what people say afterwards. And anyway, I had to walk a friend of mine home with the kids and her kids, and it was just, I don't know, something inside me just went, this is not right. I don't want my girls to see me like this. I don't want my friend's daughters to see her like this. And I got, we walked home, and there was some kind of, because we had a big old villa, and the husbands were already home, and there was some yelling, and I don't know, I think it just tripped something in my head. It did bring me back to my childhood, which is another story altogether, but there was a lot of, I was an only child with a single mum, and there was a lot of drinking adults when I was young, and it just, and I remember standing behind my daughter's door, and I, this feeling washed over me of when I was young, like hiding from pissed adults.
Oh my God, I feel like crying.
yeah, it was that visceral kind of, you know, like I feel goosebumps thinking about it, because it was just, I can't explain it, but it was just like,
not this,
and not for my daughters, who were the age I was when I felt this for the first time, you know.
Yeah.
And And
oh my gosh, Alex.
Yeah. So that was
awful.
It was really powerful. And I've, you know, since I've really worked on that feeling, and, you know, I have therapy still to this day about stuff. But anyway, that's another story. But it was just a, you know, perfect storm. It was a perfect storm of emotions, feelings, embarrassment, shame, all those things. And I, it all equaled alcohol for me in that moment. And so that was a Sunday, and I remember dropping the girls off to school the next morning, and I saw one of my girlfriends who had left a little bit earlier that night. And it was Sunday night, and your program was on TV. And she
said that Sunday.
And she said to me, "Do you know who Mrs. D is?" And I was like, "No." She said, I left early and watched the Sunday. Was it Sunday program?
Yeah.
And she said she's written this book about alcohol, and I think she kind of applies to us. And so that was Sunday. I went home, Monday. I went home that night and watched it and went, who is this woman and why is she me, you know? And
because I'm everyone.
And
so many of us.
I rang my, you know, the local bookshop, said, have you got this book? And they said, we'll get it in for you. It came in on Wednesday. I finished it. I read it all day. And on Thursday, I said to my husband, I'm going to do Dry July. I need to do it. Dry July was the following Monday. And we were going for a dinner party on Friday with our friends, the boozy friends. And Friday morning, I woke up and said to Jeff, I am going to start today. And he said, well, what are you talking about? Dry July is on Monday. And I said, no, I can't explain it. I just have, it's got to be today. And that was it. That was the last time I had a drink. Yeah. So,
I mean, perfect timing. You were right there. And it just shows, I'm not taking the credit because it's, you know, but it just shows the importance of lamplighters and visibility around
100%.
The truth about alcohol and sobriety.
Yeah, I didn't have that. I didn't have anyone like me. So someone who, you know, I could walk my friend home because she's too pissed. And she, you know, she was the girl who was crazy and falling off things. And I wasn't that person, but I was that person inside my head. You know, like what my mind was telling me when I was drinking, when I was the next day, it was all those things you described. You know, I wasn't, I was thinking about this, was I don't think I was hiding alcohol, but it was so visual and accepted where I was, I didn't need to.
But also, Alex, this is the thing around us seeming to kind of need these outward markers of dysfunction. The most impactful, you know, destructive, diminishing impacts happen on the inside. That they're not the hiding or the getting in trouble or the falling over. I mean, those things can happen, but that inside disconnect and that inside shame and that all of that stuff is devastating. And it's hard to articulate. That's why sober people are my favorite people, because we get it.
Yeah.
You didn't need to be hiding things for things to be a problem. Like, you knew. And I had the chatter. You knew.
Yeah, that's where it starts and we're our worst critic. And I know I was being so mean to myself. I was just a horrible person to me. And being a mum and a friend and, you know, a designer and all those sort of things, outwardly it was shining and fine. But inwardly it was dark and mean and and I just, you know, I kind of looked through your eyes or, you know, just other people's eyes and thought, you don't need to be so cruel to yourself. And one of the kindest things I've ever done is to stop drinking, because I say to people, because as you know, people hone in on you and they're like, oh, I want to tell you about how I drink and how I stop for a month. And I, you know, you get all those stories and that's absolutely fine. But what I try and tell people, I think the sort of the summary of my journey is that just because you stop drinking, it doesn't mean that every day is going to be golden. It's, there's you know, you feel things 100%, whether it's up here or down here.
Yes.
Yeah. It's almost, I was going to say it's worse, but it's not. It's
challenging.
Yeah, and I quite often, as because I'm a visual person, is my dark clouds have moved. You know, it's totally changed my mental health. I still, like I said, I still have therapy about all sorts of things, but I know I can step into those times without covering them up with alcohol, because that definitely was, you know, the sort of liquid bifold. You know, a blindfold that I used to put on, and I remember reading about pink clouds, and yes, I had that, but you know, that sort of like that 3 week post stopping drinking, but I just had a bigger picture in my mind that, you know, I wasn't waiting for pink clouds and then hoping for the best. I just knew that this was a long term thing. And even though I said to people, I'm doing Dry July, and that dinner party, by the way, was a fucking shocker. Like, it was mad and intense, and I saw it through sober eyes. Like, at one point, a glass was smashed in the bowl of rice, and no one noticed. And I had to sort of pick up the rice and get rid of it. But drunken. It just kind of doubled down about my – and I am an all or nothing person. That's the other thing I say. You know, I know I have an addictive personality. I'm, you know, obsessive. You know, all these things which make me. But yeah, I just know that either I do something or I don't do something. I can't kind of balance it out. And I've noticed now, being 51, you know, a lot of people, a lot of my contemporaries and friends, they tell me how they, you know, we'll only have a glass of wine. And I'm always curious, I wonder what I would have been like, whether I could have tapered off. But I'm never curious enough to think, I'll just try it again. And, yeah, actually, the one thing I was going to say to you is, you know, my daughter's just turned 21, and I've got a 19-year-old daughter as well. And that was quite curious. Like, one of the major things is I wanted them to have a sober mother. I didn't. And it was a really interesting experience. So they would have been 10 and 8 at the time. And I remember in their teens, one of them said to me, oh, you know, the other mums are so much more fun. And I know what that, you know, that was a real stab to the heart. And it wasn't a malicious thing to say. I just think it was more common to have a drinking mother than a non-drinking mother. But it's then they've got older and they've now said to me, we so love that you don't drink, mum. You know, they just don't have, you know, that secondhand embarrassment. They don't have that, you know,
that internal discomfort.
Yeah.
That they can't even probably put words to sometimes.
Well, yeah. And I know what that discomfort's like. So I just, you know, that was one thing I could do. It was a absolute no-brainer for me. And, you know, I wanted to be, I remember thinking, we had a conversation with friends about, you know, when our girls get older and, God, are we going to have to have a sober night so we could go and pick them up from a party? And I remember saying,
Uber, that's what they all do.
Yeah, Jeff can do that. He'll do, because he's really good at either go on and off, you know. And I remember thinking, what am I saying? You know, like, that's, I want to be able to do that. And so I love that my girls have always known they can ring me anytime and I'm on. You know, I'm on to pick them up. I'm on to collect them. There'd be no questions asked, maybe the next day. But, you know, they just have always known that. And I take great pride in that.
And the late night conversations with teenagers that you can't, that I would not have been able to have if I'd have been, you know, two sheets to the wind at least, because nighttime is when they come alive and you can have those lovely chats in the kitchen, you know, as everyone's heading off to bed. Yeah. So tell me, I mean, you articulate so well the fact of sobriety, which is beyond the putting the drink down, but the learning how to live every day, feeling everything in the raw.
Well, it's like all your clothes are falling off, you know. That's what it feels like. And you're
and having strategies. Like, what do I do when I feel stressed? What do I do when I feel frustrated or sad? Yeah. Is a big one for me is sad or angry, which I'm working on. I'm not very good at anger, but it needs to come in. Yeah. But how did you go about learning ways to look after yourself?
I felt exposed, you know, I felt exposed without alcohol. And it was I dipped in and out of therapy, but I didn't have the right person. I thought about maybe going to AA, and then that didn't feel right. And I went on because this is the day before Living Sober was around, you know, like what had just started, so there wasn't the community it is now. And I remember going to a message board or something, and I was having real problems, like I said, with my partner, and, he's what I'd call a good drinker, but still I was struggling with having someone drinking beside me and going to bed beside me. I really hated the smell of alcohol, and I still do to this day.
It's very unpleasant.
It takes me back to a parent kissing me goodnight, boozed, and the sloppiness that comes. Oh, sorry, it's all those visceral things that come into it, and I really struggled because I love my husband, and he's not me, and I'm not him, and that he can drink and I can't. It's really hard to not get pissed off about that and get a little bit jealous about that. And, you know, I had to work through, though, that was my biggest problem. Anyway, I went on this message board and said, what do you do about, you know, when your husband drinks and, you know, and you don't kind of, it gives you kind of the ick or whatever it is. And I sort of got this, not hate back, but it was like a real, you know, you made your choice to not drink. Don't force it on him. And I'm like, yeah, I get all that. I just need some positivity around it. I felt quite alienated by that. Yeah, so that was a bit of a struggle, because I just don't think the community was even quite where we are now, 10 years down the track.
Yeah.
I don't know who wrote that or what they kind of meant by it.
Or that person, that's right, that day, you know, sometimes. Yeah. And the written word it can sometimes be. We're always trying to be very mindful at Living Sober, and I do a bit of moderating around this about tone. Tone is really important in the written language, because you can't see someone's face and all you probably needed at that time was just a bit of empathy and validation. And
because I wasn't mad or anything, but I just wanted that support, the leg up, just someone to say, I hear you, I see you, I've had the same thing. Because I did feel alone. I did feel like there was no one around me who was sober. Mm. And that's why I was thinking about AA. And there was limited security, community around it.
Who have you got now that to support you? Have you got people that you can get?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm an only child. I've learned to be super independent, and I think that really stepped up with my sobriety. I've read all your books. I go and see a counsellor. Like, I don't rely on anyone. And whether that's a fault or I don't know, but that's just how I've handled it. I'm really open with my husband about it. And we've kind of set guides and boundaries around drinking. Like, he'd take himself off to the spare room if he's been drinking.
Nice.
Yeah, well, like, we just have talked about it, and we're quite honest about it. Actually, I think we messaged each other when I said I was off to Europe, and it was the first time I was going summer Europe with, I know, a group of boozy friends, and I was really nervous about going, because the last time I was in Europe I was a drinker, and I was drinking Aperol Spritz, and then I was having champagne or whatever it was. it went well, though. It was fine. But, you know, like, I do have to take myself away from situations and maybe go to bed a bit earlier because the nonsense talk has started and it's just same old stuff, and I get people.
I've already made plans about doing that at Christmas if need be. And I do just have the sense if my husband's had some beer, I just am like, I just want to get to the morning when you're not like this. I can't just.
Yeah, and it's really hard not to put your frustration onto them. I think that's been one of my hardest things to not do. And like I said, we've just had, you know, my daughter's 21st. And as we know in New Zealand, 21sts are about drinking. And
yeah, so tell us how it went.
Well, it was also crate day, so I was super stressed. Thinking all the boys were going to turn up and they'll be booze. But do you know what? This was a really good reminder to have a little bit of faith in humanity, because I talked to a couple of Isla's friends who were boys, and they were like, oh, I said, have you had crate day? And they said, no, we decided not to do that because we knew we were coming to Isla's 21st. So I just thought, okay, you know, I have to just remember that people have got their own journey, and I think thinking the worst is actually a real offshoot of that old chit chat brain, you know, the old boozy, you know, and I've just learnt to kind of go with it. I mean, we planned, we had a bus arrive at 10 o'clock to take all the kids into town, but I mean, we're still left with boozing adults. And I just actually, what I did was I took a few friends. I said, I'll drop you home, and I drove, so I didn't have to kind of deal with that. So it's, it's like, it was a great celebration, but there is a point where the evening turns and the yell singing starts and the people spit talking at you, and
you're just like,
And it's really, but I think it's just knowing your limits of what you can handle, where you can get to.
And just being okay about removing yourself. Hey, Alex, I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but I do want to ask you about this creativity piece and your mahi, your work, and how sobriety has impacted on that. Is it something you can clearly notice, or is it more 100%. Subtle? How's it gone?
Yeah, like, you know, we quite often hear about creatives who are alcoholics or schizophrenics, or, you know, have got these sort of mad tendencies, and I to be really honest, I was really worried that my creativity would be hindered by not having, you know, a stimulant, but in fact the opposite has been true. Like, I am I think the focus changed, and I can be more, I am more creative because I've got more headspace, which is kind of a contradiction to what society tells us. Like, I just find having a clear head opens up more space. It's more space to create, more space to think. Like, I'm not thinking about, you know, what the plan is today or how I shouldn't probably drink, but I probably will, and, you know, all that sort of the mind chatter around booze. It then opened up to being more creative within my business, and probably for the first 5 years post, like, I'd never been busier, but I could cope, you know. I was more productive, I was more invested, I had focus, and I've still got it now, but it just released that the thinking to do other things. And you know, I started back into my art practice, which is so important for me. That's my meditation. You know, I can just deep dive into art. And, yeah, it's just, I can't recommend it more.
And just finally to close, although I could talk to you for hours and you made me cry, which doesn't often happen, but just the power of that moment. Anyway, what's your relationship like with yourself now? Because you said you had that, you were mean, and you had that inner dialogue that was bringing you down. How are you with your relationship with yourself now?
Oh, look, I think I have some very deep ingrained patterns that, And like I said, I see a counsellor and have done for the last 2 years who has completely changed my life. And I remember saying to her, oh, why didn't I find you sooner? But I believe that it's the right time for her and myself now. And I am just so much kinder to myself. And what is fascinating is people who see, you know, people who are on the outside looking in think there's absolutely nothing wrong and they can't understand. But it's because I've had a lifetime of hiding shame, hiding vulnerability, pushing, you know, those parts of me which are parts of me, and now I'm addressing those parts. And, you know, probably the lay person would look in and go, well, there's nothing different. But internally, and how I talk to myself is like night and day. Yeah, I feel so much happier. Yeah, heart cut again.
How do the kids do it?
I don't know. That's why I went like that.
Yeah, love you, Ray.
Yeah.
Oh, Alex, thank you so much for coming and chatting with me and opening up and being so beautiful and vulnerable. And just, I'm so happy you got sober and
well, thank you, because
getting into your 50s and just working on being grounded and connected and healing that little girl and all of that stuff.
Well, that's funny you mentioned her, because she came out that day, and you know, whenever I'm mean to myself now, I think of that little Alex, and I just need to be so kind to her and give her a hug. And you know, that's the person in me that I need to protect, because she's still there, you know, with a lot of hurt and shame. So yeah, and it's just much easier without alcohol to do that, really. Yeah. And thank you. Because if it wasn't for that TV program and your book, I would have never felt seen.
What can I say?
Yeah, you're awesome.
Saving livers one at a time.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, take good care. And again, thank you so much. And I'll put a link in the description so people can have a look at the amazing work that you do. Oh. And just take good care of yourself. And thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.